Hello, listeners. You are listening to KGVM 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio. This is Desert Oracle Radio Replay, and I'm Roxana. Maybe you can hear in the background that they are doing some road work near my house today. So, anyway, I'm going to keep this short. We're going to do a double feature today, since I don't have a lot of nice ambiance sounds for you. But before we do that, I want to remind you that the autumnal equinox is coming up on Saturday, September 23rd, and here's one event you might be interested in attending. You can join Wild Montana's Madison Gallatin chapter at Lava Lake to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the Lee Metcalf Wilderness on National Public Lands Day. In honor of these protected lands, they're leading a free group hike to Lava Lake, volunteering as wilderness stewards to educate trail users about etiquette and leave no trace principles, and enjoying beer and brats. Okay, did that catch your attention? Beer and brats? I hope so. It's going to be a good time, so stop by the Lava Lake Trailhead to do some good and learn more about what the chapter is doing to keep Montana wild. If you want to take part in the Wilderness Walk to Lava Lake, you meet at the trailhead at 9 a.m. It is a 6-mile round-trip hike, and they will enjoy refreshments and brats after the hike. You do need to register. To register for the hike, which is required, you're going to go to wildmontana.org/event/lava-lake-celebration/. And that should be your registration form. And if you want to volunteer to help with the event, contact Gloria Burgos at gloeski@gmail.com or Tammy Clark at tclark.niraai@gmail.com. Okay, gmail.com. Okay. Anyway, there you go. Have fun. So we're coming up to our episodes of Desert Oracle Radio. The first episode I'm going to play is Warriors, Poets, and Ravens. And it actually was created by Ken Lane September 8th, 2023. That was just a week ago or so. And the second episode is Mystery of the Desert, also produced by Ken Lane, but that one was produced September 14th, 2018. Enjoy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. Early September, Jupiter tucked under the 2/3 moon at midnight. My favorite of La Luna's many forms and phases. There's a very heavy aspect to it, low over the eastern horizon, like the Death Star under construction. The owls are hooting in 3 different octaves, a whole choir by relay, a choir of the night. Air has turned cool again, the wind only whispering. Strange old verses rise up in my mind, tales of bloody fields and feasting halls and epic battles. of the prowess of people kings, of spear-armed Danes in days long sped. We have heard and would honor the Athelings one. Or maybe this from Coleridge, that graybeard loon. The fair breeze blew, the white foam flew, the furrow followed free. We were the first that ever burst into that silent sea. There are some from times nearer to us, even if the tales are older. The hammer of the gods will drive our ships to new lands to fight the horde, sing and cry, Valhalla, I am coming. On we sweep with threshing oar. Our only goal will be the western shore. Now Led Zeppelin earned some mockery for their love of Hobbit stories. Robert Plant's love of Hobbit stories in particular. But something I discovered not so long ago is that J.R.R. Tolkien and Robert Plant grew up within walking distance of each other on the leafy western edge of Birmingham in the ancient kingdom of Mercia. Won by war after the Roman legions left for good. Beowulf, which Tolkien spent years translating and then adapting into his own Middle Earth stories, was very likely written down and sang in the great halls right there in Mercia as well, modern day Staffordshire. Just 20 miles up the road in Tamworth, capital of the ancient Saxon kings and queens. Both of those writers, Plant and Tolkien, longed for the ancient woods and great adventures that are deep in the very landscape there, as was especially illuminated in 2009 when the incredible treasure of the Staffordshire hoard was discovered in a field outside Tamworth. Left behind, perhaps, from the days of King Penda, the last pagan king of England. Well, maybe not the last, but the most recent. The best description of what happened there is in the Beowulf poet's description of the prying of gold decoration from the weapons and armor of the defeated dead. Hold now, O Earth, what heroes cannot, warriors' wealth. Such worthy men first delved it from you, and deathblow battle has wrung them down. Ruinous carnage and mortal evil took every mortal man of my clan. They've quit this life and its mead hall mirth. I have no one to bear the sword or to carry forth the decorated cup. The old troops have gone elsewhere. The fierce helmet, wound with gold, must be deprived of its treasures. On every old voyage of war, a great poet was there to recount the deeds of the warriors, to glorify their works with verse that would tell their stories for centuries, for millennia. Poetry was and is the gift of the gods. the gift of Woden to his people who made the northern seas and rivers their highways to treasure and dominion. Winsbury, 16 miles from Tamworth, is a rare town name in England that still honors Woden. I came across that when I was looking for a historical film clip about the town 29 Palms, east of Joshua Tree, below the big Marine training base. And YouTube served me up a video of a song called 29 Palms that Robert Plant made 40 years ago or so. And all this comes to mind tonight because I saw in the news that some dreary old southern senator was blocking the Pentagon's usual $1 trillion annual budget, not due to a love for world peace or any such thing, but because he claims to be worried about sailors doing poetry on aircraft carriers. You never know what somebody's gonna flip out about. In the year of 20 and 23. But I was thinking maybe if the U.S. had warrior poets aboard its warships, it might win a war every now and then. Imagine that. Who knows? Dear Desert Oracle, I am planning to spend 2 weeks in Joshua Tree next month. What are your favorite hikes in the national park? Larissa from Vermont. Well, Larissa from Vermont, what are you doing leaving Vermont in October? Isn't that the best time of year, the first half of October? Maybe you're getting away from the tourists. That's understandable. But the thing about peak autumn in Vermont is that it's everywhere. Sure, you walk out of Al's French Fry and the parking lot is suddenly full of very shiny Subarus with New York plates. This is true. But get off the highway and just get lost on the back roads is just fantastic. I mean, it's not like getting lost on the back roads in Maine. That's an entire genre of horror novel. But if you want to come to Joshua Tree, have at it. The weather is nearly as good here as in Vermont. In October, a little warmer here. But the evenings and mornings are generally cool. And the cottonwoods change color if you visit one of the 2 or 3 cottonwood stands over these hundreds of barren miles. As for hikes, one thing you'll discover is that pretty much all the hikes in the national park require trudging through ankle-deep sand until you can't tell if it's the sand in your shoes that's grinding or the bones in your ankles. So all the trails are pretty much exhausting hikes, and not in a good way, you know, that's not exhilarating. About 15 years ago, my friend and comrade Corey Sika got me a book deal from one of Rupert Murdoch's publishing companies with a real advance for this half-baked idea I'd come up with after my proposal for a Mojave Desert book was aggressively rejected. This was 15 years ago, remember, when very few people had heard of the Mojave Desert or wanted to hear about it. My uninspired backup plan regarded this very vague proposal to create a California coastal trail going from San Diego all the way up to the Oregon line. And I glanced at the route and decided to pitch that as a book, writing about California during the economic collapse while walking up the coast. There was no trail, of course. It was just walking along the shore, or as close as possible when the shore was just cliffs, or when you had to get around the frequent no trespassing zones like the shoreline of the Marine Corps base, or around the nuclear power plant at Diablo Canyon. And it's just loose sand on the beach, and it's at an angle. So it's hell on your right leg and your hip. And remember, you're carrying a long-haul backpack with your sleeping bag and a tent and a change of clothes and water and a camera, a little tiny netbook, laptop that could occasionally get on a cell phone signal, some paperbacks to read, flashlight, killing knife, a regular old cell phone, because the iPhone style did not yet exist. I'd walk on the wet sand whenever I could, but then my shoes would get wet, and you don't want to walk like that. 15 plus miles a day, so I'd walk barefoot on the wet sand when I could, but high tide would push me back onto that horrible, loose, dry sand again, every day. Just hell on your ankles. The manuscript, which was about as uninspired as the original proposal, was aggressively disliked, but then the entire publishing imprint went under because of the global recession and near total collapse of global capitalism, and etc. So it was all kind of forgotten. They did not even come after me for the first half of the advance, which was fair as I'd done my part of the deal. So if you like trudging through the sand for hours, you'll have a great time on the Joshua Tree National Park trails. It's fun too when there are people 10 yards ahead of you and 5 yards behind you, and some of them are playing their favorite pop song on a Bluetooth speaker attached to their head so we can all enjoy it. We've been getting a lot of unseasonable rain beyond the occasional monsoon downpour. So who knows what the next month will bring. There's another big hurricane churning up the seas just west of Baja California right now. They say this one's not coming up, but what do they really know? Who knows what will happen in October? A little common sense goes a long way. as in most situations. One thing we learn in the desert as young children is that you never camp or picnic in a place that might fill up real quick with water. There used to be these billboards in Arizona with a cartoon family settled under some shady trees and a dry wash. And they don't see the approaching cartoon flood coming around the bend. The one I remember was in the style of illustration you'd see on old matchbook covers. Harry's do drop in, that sort of thing. It really got the message across. Everybody knows, for instance, that if you're visiting Death Valley National Park and there's a storm brewing, you don't walk out at Badwater or onto the similar alkaline lake beds with those distinctive patterns of hardened mud tiles that the great architect of nature leaves behind. Because all of that turns right back into the thickest ankle-breaking mud in about 3 minutes of light rain. And you can't get back. And nobody can get to you. They teach you that on school field trips, you know, just very basic knowledge. We've all come across the comical spectacle of some kid's hot rod pickup 3 feet deep in the slop on the side of the 247 going up to Barstow, or up around Hawthorne and Smith Valley in Nevada. So use a little common sense, like if you're going to camp in a remote desert place, maybe check the weather a week or so beforehand. The 10-day forecasts are widely used because they're fairly reliable. Weather always changes or not, but you are rarely completely surprised when you've checked the 10-day. And then glance at the weather forecast again as you get close to departure. Very easy. Otherwise, God knows what could happen. Depending on the kind of people you socialize with, you might wind up with a whole group completely ignorant of the weather that's on the way. And then you might find yourself stranded in poison fecal mud up to your knees, out of food and water, surrounded by the worst people, laughed at by the entire world. Or then maybe some wino in Susanville says, "I've had enough of these technology idiots." And he gets in a crop duster like Randy Quaid did on Independence Day, and he flies over the ridge and down the playa and strafes the wretched refugee camp again and again with everything he's got. Pesticides, Greek fire, out in a blaze of glory. I was listening for the old songs of the old gods. You can hear them sometimes on the wind, in the bird song, in the coyote song, and something else too. But it was the other night, coming back from this secret place where I walk with the dog sometimes. I was careening down this dirt road with the enormous moon to the east and the last purple light over the western mountains. And all these ravens were circling above a point just ahead. Along this dirt road are telephone and power lines on old wooden poles. And there were hundreds of ravens perched heavy on the lines and scores doing lazy aerobatics just above. At sundown, sometimes I see groups of ravens perched up high looking quietly towards the setting sun. often after a flurry of activity, playing, talking, hopping around the rocks. But then they settle, always looking west. At the crossroad ahead, though, there were just as many on the lines looking toward the full moon. I watched them until it was too dark to pick them out against the sky. What noble lives they lead. This is how they finish a day of crime and adventure all over this desert valley. I wondered if it was a celebration of the full moon in particular. I rarely see these big meetings after sunset. They usually break off into the smaller family and friends units and continue the socializing where they live. Around their nest up in the high boulders on the hilltops mostly. Now, it is true that some of these ravens had spent the day hanging around the dumpsters outside the fast food chains that line our ugly highway. Between the miles of abandoned retail and the empty lots with the for sale signs, long faded by the desert sun. But the ravens know to get far away from all that, from that whole hideous scene, when sundown comes. And for us, they provide a lesson in living. When the dull machinery of human existence drags you down, get away from it. Like the ravens do. Isaacs and across the great Mojave Wilderness, you have been listening to Desert Oracle Radio with musical soundscapes by Red Blue Black Silver. And I'm your host, Ken Lane. We sure appreciate everybody who supports the show on patreon.com/Desert Oracle. And to those who subscribe to our occasional periodical, I'm working on the fall issue now. This is episode 199. 6 years. All 6 years are available for your listening pleasure. In the Desert Oracle Radio Archives. On Saturday night, October 20, I will be bringing Desert Oracle Radio to the spooky old ruins of the Hot Springs Bathhouse in Hakumba on the edge of the desert, Hakumba Hot Springs, an hour east of San Diego. If you want to go, you just show up. This is how life used to be. You did not know until you got there. You could not check the weather app. Maybe the road washes out. Maybe there's war on the border. Maybe the demons are loosed from the pits below. Thanks for listening, and remember before you set off into the romantic desert night that a lot of roads remain washed out. You're not getting across the chasm in your leased Tesla with 4 inches of ground clearance, you know? Get a horse. Good night from the voice of the desert.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Death Valley at 108 Fahrenheit is tolerable. You can walk around even if it's mostly between the pool and the bar in your hotel room at Furnace Creek. People pose with the digital temperature display outside the National Park Visitor Center, and there are plenty of signs warning you not to attempt a midday hike. Not to leave your kids or dogs or grandma in the car. The nights are usually dry and reasonably pleasant. It's a novelty, mostly. You're in the hottest part of the Mojave Desert, surrounded by chocolate-colored mountains you know from television and movies. Star Wars, especially, because you're on Tatooine. There's even a cantina full of weird bikers and foreign tourists. And occasional English accent bar brawls. Black Sabbath bassist Geezer Butler got in a drunken fight with some Beverly Hills characters in January 2015, right there in the Corkscrew Saloon. He woke up in the Inyo County Jail, the same jail that briefly held Charles Manson and 24 members of the family. After their 1969 arrest at Death Valley's Barker Ranch. The daily temperature in Furnace Creek on the valley floor is occasionally much hotter than 108. For more than a century, Furnace Creek Ranch has held the record for the hottest temperature ever recorded on planet Earth. 134.1 Fahrenheit on July 10, 1913. This record, like the long-doubted 1922 claim of 136 in the Libyan desert, has since been questioned by the meteorologists who obsess about such things. But Death Valley also shares the undisputed world heavyweight high temperature reading of 129.2 Fahrenheit, shared with a weather station outside of Kuwait City that recorded the same temperature in June 2016, 3 summers after Furnace Creek's new record. It is notable that both of these highs occurred during our present decade. The hottest places are rapidly becoming much hotter. Death Valley earned another heat record over the long, hot summer. July 2018 in Furnace Creek was the hottest month ever recorded anywhere on Earth, with an average daily temperature of 108.1 Fahrenheit, half a degree hotter than the previous July just a year ago. And the records keep falling. Furnace Creek recorded 120 degrees on September 8, beating the old 118 Fahrenheit record from just 10 years previous. Around the world, century-old records are dropping like flies, and in the sprawling desert cities of the West, Phoenix and Las Vegas and the fast-growing Coachella Valley metropolitan area of Palm Springs and Palm Desert and other desert cities. The temperatures are not novelties. People fall over dead doing routine things, yard maintenance, playing golf, a short walk to work or to the store. The busiest hour at urban dog parks in the desert summer starts at 5 a.m. when the sidewalks are crowded with joggers panting in the 100-degree darkness. We are the gloomy, nocturnal, off-world colonist in Philip K. Dick books now, spending most of our lives burrowed in narcotic fog, consuming entertainment that shows a world now nearly gone, snowy mountains, wildlife herds, breezy beaches with cool ocean waters. As the crushing triple-digit heat waves in San Francisco and Los Angeles and San Diego have shown us again this year, you no longer need to travel to Death Valley for record-high temperatures. On July 6, it was an insane 111 degrees Fahrenheit at UCLA in Westwood. These record highs come with numbing regularity now as a generation uncomfortably learns that the old California is gone. The old California where air conditioning was either an unnecessary luxury or something they put in the tract homes to make life bearable out in the valley or inland empire. Los Angeles and the San Francisco Bay Area are woefully under-equipped for the global warming that is well underway. Drought has killed off the trees that once shaded and cooled the bungalows and the ramblers. The home improvement chains run out of fans and window units. The sea breeze that kept coastal towns and suburbs cool in summer just doesn't do the trick anymore. Persistent high pressure offshore and searing city temperatures add up to nights too hot for sleeping, days too oppressive for the holy outdoor lifestyle of California legend. And it's hard to do much outside when everything's on fire, when the air you breathe is always heavy with smoke and bits of burning matter. We are living in an oven that can't be turned off. It would be nice to have a clear mission in life, wouldn't it? Get your orders and you're on your way. Report to Mars Base 11. Your tickets are waiting at the gate. Joe Dixon, the cave goblin, will meet you at the hotel bar. Yes, ma'am, on the way. Convert the native population. I will do my able best. Protect the endangered elephants in this national park for the rest of my life? Yes, of course, that's the job. Join a 1,000-generation cult pledged to terraform a harsh new planet? It is my duty. March up to Pharaoh and tell him to let my people go? Well, somebody's got to do it. Who am I to argue with a mission from God? Besides, my brother Aaron will do the talking because for whatever mysterious reason, someone who cannot talk has been chosen to speak for the Lord. Aaron is a semi-mythical biblical figure who is nonetheless the blood patriarch to the priestly Cohen line. An interesting thing about the Aaronites, the descendants of Moses' brother Aaron, is that they most likely wrote the parts of the Torah that gave their paternal line exclusive high priest rights. The direct line to God. The Hebrew God later upgraded to be the universal creator God. That's a lot of religious power. And in an Iron Age theocracy, that meant all the political power, too. Transmissions come in many ways. Weird lights in the desert brush for Moses. Circles of multicolored fire in the sky for Ezekiel. A column of fire for the wanderers in the wilderness. Baffling lights over the desert highway, over the road to Damascus. The beam of pink light that set off years of strange visions and prophecies in Philip K. Dick. A 13-year-old French girl is bathed in a column of light as voices speak strange prophecy that only she can hear. She will become known to the world as Joan of Arc. A light turns on in your brain. That's how the big ideas arrive. And then you say, I have seen the light. The Virgin of Fatima was an entity, a blinding white light communicating wordlessly to the three shepherd children, the children who promised a miracle for the masses on October 13, 1917. So when tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 people arrived at this Portuguese town, they witnessed something brighter than the sun appearing on this overcast day with rain drenching the crowd as it stood in the puddles and stood in the mud. And there were reporters from Paris and London. Professors, theologians, farmers and the faithful. And they all witnessed the bizarre phenomena, which included the muddy pastures and standing rainwater turning to warm, dry ground in a matter of minutes. Their wet clothing was instantly dried by the intense heat radiated by the spinning disc, hovering just over the crowd. People were recoiling from the spectacle and the waves of heat, many more kneeling in prayer, wailing in terror. World War I would begin the following summer. 16 million people would die in the trenches by genocide, by starvation. The Spanish flu claimed another 50 million lives. Václav Havel, the former president of Czechoslovakia and the leader of the Velvet Revolution, had an experience like this himself. He said these experiences surface again and again in the cultural achievements of humanity, and often in individual human experiences as well. In a way that we scarcely understand, they transcend what a person might know in himself or inherit from his ancestors. It seems rather as if something like an antenna were picking up signals from a physically indeterminable transmitter that contains the experience of the entire human race. Philip K. Dick called it VALIS, Vast Active Living Intelligence System. Carl Jung named it the Collective Unconscious. We don't know what it is, and we don't know if it's divinely inspired because we can't agree on what divine means. But it's real and it's there. And if you hunger for knowledge, the gates will be found open eventually. Maybe when you're looking for it least. Every door in the house of wisdom open to all those who try the lock. All of these contact types, religions, rituals, sacrifice, prayer, pleading, are protocols developed over tens of thousands of years. We are something like a loose priesthood. Those of us who attempt such things, those of us who open our ears to listen, or maybe they're the priesthood, whatever it is behind the blinding lights and the voices and the visions, the ghostly figures who walk through walls and lead the baffled human to the mystery ship hovering above. The little columns of machine elves marching around when we open a particular door in the mind. The blue goblins that led medieval German miners to their death. The relationship is unsettled, unclear, from our side anyway. Maybe it makes more sense from their side, maybe to some of them. Maybe they're us, from another time, from another dimension. They've always been right here with us, here on Earth. This is their home, too. The natural or supernatural habitat for an intelligence that has accompanied mankind since the beginning of our time and has chosen to demonstrate itself or themselves to us on occasion and possibly through great effort, great use of energy and light, electrical plasma, transmission of information and mood directly to the contactee's consciousness. Such contacts have always occurred upon the wilderness civilization interface, as we call it now, the frontier between the built environments of mankind and the natural earthly environments. The intelligence is deeply and significantly different than us. There is not a human alive who can tell you with certainty whether the intelligence is artificial, natural, generated by our own consciousness, generated by an external consciousness, or even extraterrestrial or transdimensional. The earthly names we have given such entities are just that, names and not scientific descriptions. One person's god is another person's goblin. The shiny metallic craft reported by a military pilot might be a brilliant chariot pulled by sky monsters in the eyes of an Axial Age prophet. And neither are likely physical craft, things that exist in a stable state of matter or being. For 70 years, the UFO cult has chased rumors of nuts and bolts interplanetary spacecraft visiting Earth from some other solar systems, other galaxies, and we've got nothing. But in that time, across those 70 years of technological marvels and spiritual collapse, we have constructed interplanetary spacecraft. And we have visited and landed upon other worlds, moons, and planets, and asteroids. And with the twin Voyager craft, we have now traveled beyond our solar system. We have counted nearly 4,000 exoplanets, the first of those in the 1990s, only a quarter century ago. We, the Earth people, have computed a likely number of Earth-sized potentially habitable planets based on the nearly 4,000 discovered planets and 3,000 discovered star systems detected by our space telescopes. And that number now stands at 11 billion planets, just in our own galaxy, the Milky Way. Which is especially beautiful. this week, this moonless week out on the desert? Every human being alive today could have their own habitable planet in the Milky Way, and 4 billion Earth-sized planets in the habitable zone could still be set aside as wilderness, galactic natural parks and preserves. That's if we don't kill off this planet first. A galaxy of incredible adventure and discovery awaits humanity in the coming decades and centuries. We are closer to the likely time of human colonies on Mars and the Moon than we are to World War II or I Love Lucy or I Want to Hold Your Hand or Watergate or Reagan versus Carter. Gods, ETs, devils, angels, ghosts, elves, pixies, chupacabras, Sasquatch, skinwalkers, sprites, reptilians, tall Nordics, greys, motherships, Mother Mary. Early contacts and early human civilization established a protocol, a pantheon of tricksters and saviors and jealous gods demanding sacrifice and allegiance. And this protocol was built upon an ongoing process of revelations in the wild desert outside the great cities. The founding of the great monotheistic religions, the modern and ancient folklore regarding rumored alien visitations, anthropological evidence such as petroglyphs and intaglios, we are convinced the protocol is deeply attached to our species and is the basis for the limited and mysterious relationship we have with the intelligencer entities. The details and names change, but the basics remain unchanged. As Jesus commanded his disciples, "Come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while." It was advice he himself repeatedly followed, alone in desert wilderness. Evidence suggests the most fruitful place to continue the work of communication with the entities and intelligences is a physical and spiritual anchoring in the desert wilderness. We must act as part priesthood, part anthropologist. We engage in cleverness or deception at our peril and with no record of success. The last words you want to hear from a god are the next time you see me coming, you better run. These encounters across time and across cultures and largely across the deserts that make up one-third of our planet's landmass should be remembered and should be studied with an open heart and an open mind because these events contain a code. Not a numerical puzzle, not a riddle to be solved. The code consists of patterns and variations that may well add up to a revelation that comes seemingly out of the blue. It may concurrently occur around the world as great scientific leaps are so often dreamed up at the same time by far-flung researchers. What is called multiple discovery or simultaneous independent invention. That's why Nobel Prizes in the sciences so often are split between two or three researchers from different continents and different approaches. Through serendipity, coincidence, synchronicity. What will it mean when we know how it works? Our ongoing work is to study and disseminate occurrences of interest to this field of study. These occurrences may or may not display typical attributes of a religious or paranormal experience. They may exhibit their presence through the creation of beautiful and influential art, such as the New Mexico paintings by Georgia O'Keeffe, or the matter-of-fact testimony from professional pilots after experiences with brilliant and intelligently controlled lights in the open sky. Whether there are naturally evil or chaotic elements is unknown. Did Charles Manson receive sinister instructions from the super spectrum? Or did his mind and spirit, ruined by human cruelty, pervert vague messages into instructions for setting off a global race war that he would wait out in the desert? What about the consistent appearance of death cults when society is fraying? The violent cults worshiping Kali the Destroyer and La Santa Muerte? These returns to sacrificial rites, gifts to goddesses of death and destruction. Listening to Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree, California. You may be listening to the program on your car radio, on your portable radio around a campfire, in a cabin, on base, in a monastery cell or a prison cell, on the road, on the run. If you like podcasts, subscribe to our podcast using the service of your choice, whether iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn. You'll find the entirety of our first season, 35 episodes, and the entirety of our new season, our second, as we create it. If you're in the California desert next month, we direct your attention to the holy night of Halloween, Wednesday at 7 p.m., October 31, when I will be at the campfire bringing campfire stories back to the Ace Hotel in Palm Springs. It's an all-spooky story night. We've got a bar set up right there outside. You can order food from the King's Highway. There will be trick-or-treating for the youngsters. Oh, and maybe the Yucca Man will be hanging around in the shadows. So keep your small dogs close at hand. Small children, too. Use the code Desert Oracle when you're reserving a room at the Ace, and you'll get a nice discount. Spend the difference on a cocktail or two. There will be additional Campfire Stories events, both up here in the high desert and also at the Ace Hotel throughout the autumn and winter. But Halloween is the first one, Wednesday, October 31st. We will have information on all such things at our website, desertoracle.com. Desert Oracle Radio broadcasts live on KCDZ 107.7 FM in the Mojave High Desert and is also distributed by PRX, Public Radio Exchange, worldwide. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver for tonight's soundscapes. And good night from the voice of the desert.
Well, thank you, Gallatin Valley, for listening. As always, you can call me and leave a message about anything on your mind. The number's 406-404-6246. Remember to spread the word. You can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. Well, that's it for today. So till next time, listeners, be safe, stay well, and sweet dreams.